From the Hope 205 Studios, a Joe Louville Productions studio venture.
Imagine a workplace where leaders focus on empowering their teams, where the growth and well-being of people are at the heart of every decision. This isn't a distant dream. This is Activating Hope.
Emotional intelligence, EI, or emotional quotient, EQ, has become increasingly important in the age of AI. It is vital in fostering empathy, ethical decision-making, and collaboration. While AI is excellent at tasks that involve logical reasoning and data analysis, it lacks the ability to understand and respond to human emotions. EI bridges this gap by enabling individuals to recognize, understand, and manage emotions, leading to more meaningful relationships. In this episode of Activating Hope, we chat with Dr. Robin Hinkle and discuss the importance of EI becoming more relevant in the current landscape, where technology, particularly AI, is transforming how we interact, work, and live. Dr. Hinkle is the program chair for the Doctor of Business Administration at Franklin University. Previously, she served as Associate Professor and Director of the Master of Science in Communication, MSBC program at Spalding University in Louisville, Kentucky. In addition to teaching in the MSBC program, she oversaw the promotion and day-to-day operations of it. During her 10 years in that position, she developed and implemented 4 new concentrations, as well as certificate programs. She's accustomed to working with adjunct teaching faculty, which I've had the pleasure of working with her as a professor at Spalding University. A large part of her role there was interacting and recruiting with the proper talent for each course, training, maintaining positive relationships with each one, and monitoring their performance. Dr. Hinkle previously taught at the University of Louisville, and in addition, she brings a wealth of business, marketing, consulting, and human resource experience. She has worked for various organizations, including Humana and the U.S. Army Research Institute. Her research areas are organizational leadership, self-awareness, and business ethics. We are excited to have Dr. Hinkle with us on this episode of Activating Hope. We are going to talk about the importance of leading with EI. And I have a dear friend, and we were just talking before we got on today about how long we've been in this friendship. And it's probably been what you would say, Dr. Robin Hinkle, about a little bit over a decade.
Yes, it is. I met you when I started working at a university here in Louisville, Kentucky, and that was July of 2013.
That is so hard to believe. And we started working together, and then it just turned into this friendship. Like you said, you made the joke about it feels like it's been so much longer. And I was like, yes, in a good way. It feels like we've always known each other. So it started off professionally, you know, has evolved personally. But yes, how much overlap professionally we've had, because we had the pleasure of having you write in our leadership books, which has been wonderful. So we've had a lot of collaborative efforts. And now to be able to have you on our podcast to talk about something I know you were very passionate about and have done a lot of research in your work. And I just think that this is something that, you know, it started off a long time. You would hear a lot about emotional intelligence. And now I think there's a lot of things out there, a lot of misunderstandings about it. So, you know, I really want to start our conversation off today with, what is it really? I mean, what are people calling it today? What does it mean when somebody says, you know, leaders need to be emotionally intelligent? What are they talking about?
Okay. Well, EI, or some people call it EQ, it's the same thing.
Good to
emotional
know.
Emotional intelligence or emotional quotient, you know, just to go along with IQ type of thing. But it's really just recognizing and understanding emotions in yourself, being able to manage them, and then also seeing them in other people so that you can manage that relationship. And I think it also goes that step further. So the motive for really understanding that relationship is to be able to offer support and aid and create collaboration in your relationships.
I love that.
And so there are separate skills involved. So, you know, some focus on yourself mm-hmm. and some focus on others. But emotional intelligence as a whole always involves self and others. So it is really about how you relate to people outside of yourself mm-hmm. and, you know, personally and at work. So they're called skills because you can get better at them. I mean, it's not just
it can be learned. And, you know, I think you and I have both seen this. Probably you've definitely seen this in your research. Probably for me, I've seen this more in the practical side of leadership development coaching somebody with a very strong IQ mm-hmm. to develop these skills that you're talking about for EQ.
Right.
Because and honestly, sometimes I think it's harder for them to learn. When people that just naturally have some of these things, it's people are like, how do you just know how to do that? I just do. For people that don't, I think it is a very intentional and conscious effort of behavior. I don't mean to analysis paralysis about that, but I think you do have to have a level of awareness and intentionality in your communication because you don't naturally go there first to think about that.
Right. And we don't always want to look at ourselves and think about what could we do to improve ourselves. But I think that's really the beginning of this whole thing. So you do, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you do have to have some awareness to actually work on your awareness, on your self-awareness.
Exactly.
So if you're going around blind all the time and you don't think about these types of things, then you're just going through life and not examining how you might be coming across to other people. And how your relationships are affected by that.
And when you're a leader, how critically important that is to be aware of those things. Critically important. So how would you describe then, you know, you talked about some skill sets of that. How would you mm-hmm. describe the core components of emotional intelligence? And what aspects of that do you think are the most often misunderstood or oversimplified? Because a lot of people say, well, you just need to be self-aware. I've heard people narrow down emotional intelligence to it's just about being self-aware. But I know from learning from you that, you know, there are some core components of this. And so what would you say from your experience are, again, most often misunderstood or oversimplified?
Well, there are a lot of models out there for emotional intelligence. You could just Google it and see all these out there. And they usually have four or five different components. So self-awareness is always on there. Self-regulation or self-management. So how do you manage those emotions in yourself? How do you understand other people's emotions? So empathy. And how do you manage that once you kind of understand what other people are feeling? So some people call that those social skills. And then a lot of models will have maybe a fifth component, like motivation. So why are we even doing this? And how do we keep ourselves focused on our goal using our emotions and all the emotions around other people? So I did a lot of research to think about what did I really want to learn more about and what tools could I use to help other people assess their emotional intelligence. And I landed on this one through a company called Genos International. They're out of Australia. So they actually have six components. So it's a little more granular. And I really like that because I think the more granular we can get with these skills, the more we can focus on the ones that we might struggle with instead of just putting everything all together and saying, oh, I need to work on my self-awareness. Well, there are different pieces to that. So for the model that I use, still self-awareness, still self-management, awareness of others, but there's also authenticity there. So how do I feel like I can show up as myself? It doesn't mean that I'm just oversharing and I'm just letting it all hang out and, you know, you can take me or leave me type of thing. It's really finding a comfort level where I work. Mm-hmm. This tends to be focused on the workplace. And also the next component is emotional reasoning. So how do I use my emotions to help guide me in the decisions that I make and how I relate to other people? And then ultimately there's inspiring performance. So how how does my ability to understand my own emotions, other people, make me a good leader? So all of that is included in this model, and I just really love it because the assessment is also set in a particular workplace. So it's not just in general assessing someone's self-awareness or whatever.
It's very specific to their situation.
It really is. So when you're doing the assessment, it's asking about your particular workplace. Because, you know, as we know, some things work in one organization, but not in another. So it really drills down to that. So it's say you're more of a creative type. That doesn't always play in Peoria. Not every organization really likes you to be thinking outside the box. I mean, some are just more bureaucratic. They have rules and regulations that you follow. So you might not feel your most authentic self in an organization if you are that type of person who likes to add on and to think more creatively. So it really gets at that and helps people understand why they might not be feeling as comfortable in one environment as another.
Well, and you bring up a really good point with that, because my next question was going to be to you, you know, beyond the traditional soft skills, helping with that, you know, what ways do you believe the EQ can impact someone's professional and personal life? And what I just heard you say is that, you know, maybe when I go through this process, I find that I'm working with an organization that values-wise, culture-wise, is not really what I have to offer. Mm-hmm. And so it can also be a good way, and, you know, not that you take this to leave and go find another job, but for some people that are struggling, and I experience this a lot in my leadership development work, that sometimes we find out it doesn't matter how hard a leader works, if it's just not a fit for what they have to bring to the table, mm-hmm. then maybe that's something they need to look at. Where can I go, as it's in your example, to be that creative person?
Right.
And really be able to showcase that, because it gets very hard to continually show up to be what you're not. I'm not saying you can't work on some of these other aspects of it, mm-hmm. but you're always going to have to probably be putting a lot of effort into it versus if it's something that comes to me more naturally. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, when you asked me that question about what are the components that people misunderstand about this, it really ties into to how do I understand these concepts in a way that I can actually apply them? And for me, I'm always thinking about in leadership. It's also very important for individual contributors to have this information too. But I mean, my area of research is leadership. So I really focus on that. But like when people think about self-awareness, it's really two parts. So a lot of people think, this is just me navel gazing and really trying to understand myself. But the other side of that is, how do I come across to other people? So this whole self-awareness piece is really why I became interested in emotional intelligence. So you have a doctoral degree and you've done research. So you know that a lot of times when people get into something, it's really me search. They're trying to figure out what's wrong with them. And they think that if I go into this, it'll all become clear. And so I think with self-awareness for me is I wasn't always coming across the way that I thought I was, that my intentions were in the way that I came across wasn't always landing. So that's really what got me looking at this. And, you know, one of the things is I knew myself, but I wasn't understanding how I come across to other people. So I saw this the very first time I taught at the college level when my course evaluations came in. And someone said that I was unapproachable. I really worked hard to listen to my students and to let them know that I care about them as individuals, not just as students. And so I was really taken aback by that. And so, you know, what I really, after talking to a lot of people and getting feedback, it was my facial expressions were really, I was not that good of an actress. And so I really had to get a grip on that, of how I was coming across to other people, because it wasn't matching my intentions.
Interesting.
This other piece that I assess, this emotional reasoning, it really comes across, it sounds like an oxymoron, because people think, well, I'm not supposed to use my emotions when I'm making decisions, when I'm trying to reason something out. And so it's really just looking at your emotions as a data point.
I love that. And I say that all the time, because I'm like, it is a data point. It is a data point. It's not the only data point, but it is, in fact, one that you should tap into.
Well, if you discount it, you're discounting all of your previous experience, because a lot of that stuff just culminates in the body. And when you ignore it, ignore that feeling in your gut or in your chest, there's something there. So I'm not saying you should be ruled by your emotions, but don't just ignore them and write them off and say, I'm not supposed to be feeling this way. I just need to look at the facts.
Just tap into it. Tap into it. Well, and I love the part you said about the facial expressions, because I do not have a poker face either. And so anybody that knows me, I cannot lie my way out of something. I can say to you, oh yeah, I love that. And then you can tell by my body language that I am feeling something else. So how does EI relate to other skills like that? Somatic awareness, language, communication. I mean, how is that play into all of this? Of like, how does it enhance it?
Well, talking about those sensations that you have in your body, the earlier that you can recognize that you're being triggered by something, the sooner that you can get a hold of it and focus on that whole self-management piece. So we all have been in meetings or had things happen to us where we felt our heart racing, or just a tightness in the chest, or maybe a knot in the stomach. For me, I tend to clench my teeth. So that's something that it's the whole TMJ thing that happens. And so I clench my teeth, and then all of a sudden I have tension all the way through my shoulders. And so I know when I'm doing that I really need to check inward and think about what in the world is going on that is making me have such this strong reaction. And so that enables me to calm down, maybe take a pause, maybe take some deeper breaths. Maybe, a lot of this is happening because I'm doing some shallow breathing because there's something going on. This actually happened to me a couple of weeks ago when I was in a meeting with some people who we just had some different opinions about how things should be done. And, I noticed that my shoulders were creeping up near my ears while we were on Zoom. I could see it. So I was able to, back off and think, okay, here's what's going on. And so when you do that, you can, think about other people and their reactions as well, and try to, figure out what's going on. So in this particular scenario, we all just wanted to do what's best for the student. I work at a university, but we had a different way of going about that. And so it really enabled me to think about and to actually express, we have common ground here. So let's think about how we can get to the same point without everyone being so tense and so worked up. And after that meeting, I found out from some other people there was this one woman in the meeting that she just broke down in tears afterwards. I mean, she just was so emotionally caught up in this, and she was not able to regulate that. Not that anything's wrong with tears. Believe me, I've cried at work plenty of times.
I've cried so many times, when they say there's no crying in baseball or in the office, I'm like, well, I'm screwed.
Exactly. Here's the place I go to cry.
Normally the bathroom, right. There's nobody in there, but.
So it's one of those things that as soon as you can get a grip And I mean, just be able to understand that something, there's this whole mind-body connection. There's no way to separate that. And use that sensation that you're having in your body as a clue. Maybe I need to think about this.
And I especially appreciate that, you know, thinking about language choice and tone, especially when you're in those difficult conversations, those high stakes conversations like you were just in. Mm-hmm. It's important to realize what's happening to me right now. If I'm starting to feel physically something about this, why am I upset about this right now? And then that's when I call them self-coaching moments. I'm like, I need to coach myself about what's about to come out of my mouth right now. Maybe it's better I don't say something in this moment. Or I am a huge fan of the breath. And that's not because I have done yoga for 2 decades, but it is also because I have done yoga.
It could have something to do with it.
It could. But it's that, you know, I always hear one of my yoga teachers in my head saying, take a cleansing breath in and a cleansing breath out. You know, there's in this moment, there's nothing that you have to do or necessarily say. And I think with that self-awareness piece, with emotional intelligence, it helps you start working your brain to have this pattern or habit of behavior of when you're starting to feel like that, how do you get yourself to a different space to be able to hear it instead of getting worked up? Or, and again, nothing wrong with the woman that cried, but you know, how do I kind of take myself a step back from that and realize, as you said, and I thought that was a very healthy take on that, is, you know, why am I being bothered by this? And what's the common ground? Like, we're not all here fighting because we don't want good things for students. We're all here because we do want good outcomes for that. But rarely do I find in the work I do around conflict that we start with what we agree on. We always start with the 2 to 3 to 5% that we don't. And then I think that's when emotions get high. And then when we start there, it's really hard for us to go back and listen because we're already messed up about like why you didn't agree with me, why I didn't agree with you, and et cetera. I appreciate that. So if our leaders out there listening to this episode are thinking, okay, I can relate to this, I got some issues around this, what are some of the first steps that they can take to improve their EI? I mean, what would you recommend somebody coming in saying, how do I establish some habits, some practices? Because I'm really, really trying to work on this.
Okay. Well, you know, I always go back to self-awareness. I mean, it's not going to be the answer, but I've always thought that it's really the foundation for emotional intelligence, because I think if you can't recognize and understand emotions within yourself, how in the world are you going to do that for other people? Because a lot of that's a guessing game. And if people are like us, where we're not very good actresses, or, I mean, they just might not be coming across the way that they intended to either. So I think one of the first things is to be able to label the emotions that you're having. And that's not always easy, because people tend to clump things all in just a few categories. People tend to say they're stressed, or they're angry, or they're sad. And the more granular you can get around that, the more you'll be able to manage it. So there's evidence that that whole adage that what you can name, you can tame.
I love that. What you name, you can tame.
Yes. And so that is true in this case. So you know, when you understand, look, I've got this feeling inside, and it's not anger. What is it? And, you know, most people cannot distinguish between anger and disappointment. So I think about when I first got married, and every time my husband always thought all my negative reactions were anger. And so the longer we were married, I was able to tell him, no, I'm not mad. What I am is I'm frustrated, or I'm overwhelmed, or
disappointed.
I just You can disappointed, say it's, yes, yes, all of these different things. And so the English language is not always helpful. We don't have a lot of nuances. I mean, think about the German language. I mean, they have a word for everything. And so
being half German, yes, I don't understand it because I don't speak German, but they do. They have a lot of words.
So, you know, even the Japanese have a word for the emotion that you feel after you've had a bad haircut.
I love that. Do you know what that is? I've felt that before.
I have too. So, so other languages just have a lot more nuance to them. But for us, I mean, we just have to try our best to come up with, try to pinpoint the most accurate feeling that we're having. And this is kind of akin to if you have some type of physical ailment, and once you get a proper diagnosis, you tend to be able to cope with it better, even if nothing has really changed. It's the unknown of why is this hurting?
Very true.
But once you know why it is, it's just easier to cope with it. So, so the more that we can develop a vocabulary for our feelings, I think the better we'll be able to manage them. And to also think that, you might be experiencing more than one emotion. So I think about as I was getting prepared for this podcast, I was having several emotions. I was feeling nervous because I want to be articulate and I want to give good information to people and so that your listeners can actually go out and use it. But I was also excited because you asked me to do this. You're interested in my topic and you want other people want to learn more about
they
it.
They do. So, people are hungry. And I would say that this is probably for me and the 2+ decades I've been doing leadership development and, you know, in the last 15 doing the one-on-one, this is something that a lot of people struggle with. And we see this when 360 data comes back, where it's that self-perception, it's the boss perception, it's direct report perception, it's peer perception. Sometimes there's just this light bulb of, you know, you talked about this too with yourself, with your like, when you got your evaluations back from your students, you're like, oh my gosh, I was not showing up like I thought I was, you know, mm-hmm. And that's when leaders get this feedback of, I really thought I was showing up this way. And my boss thinks I'm showing up this way. My team thinks I'm showing up this way. So how do I work with that and really put that into some form of alignment so that we can have successful relationships? So would you say then when it comes to this, the self-awareness piece, that it really does help with decision-making and managing relationships. Like when you have not only, you know, I mentioned the 360 data, but when you start being more aware of this or you're getting feedback as you did on the evaluation, or let's say you take the assessment and you get that, do you think that that is really good data that people can start using to managing relationships and making better decisions in their life, and especially as leaders?
And I absolutely do. And I'm glad you brought up the 360 because, I mean, a lot of leaders have had 360s done on them in their organization. And they think, well, I have a good handle on what my emotional intelligence is. But the truth is the things that they are measuring in 360s, they're not really emotional skills. So when you think about what they might be, they are things like self-control, trustworthiness, conscientiousness, adaptability,
communication.
How do I deal with, am I a good team player? That, am I inspiring? Those types of things. They're things that you think about a leader's reputation. So they don't necessarily measure emotional intelligence. So one of the things that I encourage people to do is to go out online. There's lots of free emotional intelligence assessments out there. I mean, they're not all valid, but I mean, at least you can get a sense
a baseline of
what's out there. Just a shameless plug for the group that I work with, Genos, is it is set in the organization that you work in, and they are validated to measure emotional skills.
And Robin, isn't there also with Genos, there's a 360
that
you can take related specifically to emotional intelligence?
Exactly.
Measuring just those components of it.
Exactly. It's those six that I talked about earlier, with emotional reasoning, authenticity, and inspiring others included in there. So that's one way to do that. And the way that Genos does that is that they reach out to your direct reports or your peers and your leaders so that you can do a 360. You can also do a 180 that way if that makes more sense. But anyway.
And what is a 180? Explain a little bit to our listeners that might not be familiar. Most are familiar with the 360, but when you say 180, what is the 180 version of that?
That could be where just your direct reports.
So not even your boss. Okay. It would just be your direct reports.
It could be just your direct reports. And that tends to be what most clients use because that's what they're most interested in is what their direct reports think of them.
How to lead better.
So one way to, if you don't want to go that whole route, I recommend a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. You can get it for $20 on Amazon. And it's, it has a pre and post assessment in there. So you take it when you first get the book, there's a code in there to do it. And then there's all different types of tools and suggestions and recommendations through it. And then, you know, after a certain period amount of time, it gives a recommendation for how long you wait after you try to put some of these things in action. And then you go back and take it again. So I love the whole pre and post.
Oh, I do too. Idea. I do too. So, it's just so you can see progress.
Yeah. And, you know, and back to the whole idea of language, once you start doing this, then you can develop your vocabulary for how you are feeling and how other people are feeling. And, you know, one of the things about having that vocabulary is that you can provide information to people that they would know better how to support you. So just, you know, just back to where, you know, the early part of my marriage when my husband just thought I was mad all the time. You know, when I was telling him, you know, I was disappointed because I didn't do as well on the test that I thought, you know, I thought I had done better on the test. Then at that point, then, you know, we could have a good conversation and he could support me versus he just thought I was mad.
At him, and he was taking personally. Yeah. So, you know, that self-awareness is, look, I'm going to spend a minute in it. This has nothing to do with you,
right?
But I need a minute in something else. And it's that self-awareness that I know I am.
Right.
And communicating that.
Exactly.
Are you ready to activate hope and drive change? At Integrating Women Leaders Foundation, we're committed to developing leaders and enabling companies to maximize productivity. That's why we support Activating Hope, the podcast, your go-to source for leadership development and business best practices. Join us in breaking down barriers and creating equal opportunities for all. Discover programming that develops both personal and professional growth and engage in bold conversations to address systemic challenges. Don't miss out. Learn more about how you can be part of this movement. Visit iwlfoundation.org. That's IWLFoundation.org today. Together, we can create a world where everyone has access to unlimited possibilities for success. Are you an artist struggling to bring your creative visions to life? Whether you're planning a multi-country tour, mounting a play at a local theater, or recording your first album, Before the Applause is here to guide you through every step of the way. Authored by industry experts Joe DeCenzi and Joe Hanna, this groundbreaking book offers artists the fundamentals of project management paired with leadership skills crucial to getting your artistic projects over the finish line. Unveiling Before the Applause, your ultimate guide to project management for artists.
So with all this emotional stuff that we've talked about, and at the very beginning of our conversation today, you mentioned the word empathy under some of the components, the core components of emotional intelligence. And so I think it's important that we discuss that role of empathy and how it differs from sympathy, because I think a lot of people use those words interchangeably and they are not necessarily the same. But how would you say that, first of all, that differs? And what is its effect on relationships? And can empathy ever create challenges in a professional context? Because, you know, we pump leaders hard to be empathetic, I hear all the time that one of the top things you need to be as a leader is be empathetic. And I also know a lot of leaders, like, what exactly does that mean? And again, how does that differ from sympathy?
All right. So, you know, the traditional definition of empathy is, you know, putting yourself in someone else's shoes and, you know, really being able to truly understand and connect with their feelings. And so that's what empathy is. And sympathy is really just showing that you care about someone. And I think they both have a place everywhere, at work and, you know, in our personal lives for sure. But the sympathy just doesn't build that connection that empathy does. So empathy is understanding how someone is feeling, the situation that they're in. But I also believe, and other people might call this something else, but it's also adding that compassion piece to where you actually are taking some action to help them. To try to not necessarily solve their problem, but to show that you care. So I think that's really the difference there. And empathy, I think, is much more important. Although, you know, we all sympathize with people.
I always say when someone dies, what do we send? Sympathy cards.
That's
sympathy
right.
cards. And, you know, I think, should we be sending empathy cards? Could that be a whole line of Hallmark? You know, because it's a different way of looking at it. And I know Brene Brown, there's some meme or there's something that, you know, just shows somebody that's having a really, really hard time and somebody comes and sits down next to them and just sits there with them mm-hmm. and says, I know right now you are having a really hard time with this
right.
and it's okay. And whatever I can do to support you. And I know that the grief that you and I have both experienced in the last several years with the mm-hmm. loss of mothers and sisters. And, you know, I have appreciated the empathy people have given me around that, where they're not trying to fix anything necessarily. They understand this is a really, really hard place in life, but they're here to support me with whatever I need, but there's no pressure. And sometimes empathy can just show up in, I just check in on you. I send you a text and say, Robin, thinking about you today, you know, and I think that's important as leaders, that I'm not always trying to fix something, but I just want you to know, hey, I know it's rough right now and we'll get through it. And I think that's very important, but I also know that people that don't often have a high level of self-awareness, they want to often fix it. And when somebody's going through something, and so they're listening to fix versus like listening to just understand and support. I mean, would you say you've seen that as well?
Yeah. And I think, you know, empathy has a positive connotation, but I think in the workplace, sometimes there can be some pitfalls around that as well. So there are some people who describe themselves as empaths. So they really understand people's feelings, but they take that on. And so they can become overwhelmed. So I think that's not really a mark of high emotional intelligence if all you do is absorb other people's feelings and then you're not able to control that within yourself or to provide help to the other person.
That is a,
so it's
a
emotional
great point.
Overload.
That's a great point. Do you have a specific example of maybe a time when empathy led to a better outcome for you, or you've observed that in other people in a work or personal situation where empathy, they were doing it, not being an empath, not taking too much in, but just using the right amount of empathy that it really ended up having a positive outcome in that situation, that relationship?
Well, I recently took over as chair of my department, and I had a new employee who he was also running a doctoral program, and he was not performing as I expected. And it was one of those things where he wouldn't reply to my emails, and I was just asking simple information, and he wouldn't reply to our dean's emails or our provost. And I'm like, what is going on? Because I was getting feedback. It's like, why is he not just responding to things? And so, So I set up a meeting with him and, you know, just tried to understand what was going on with him. And he was just overwhelmed with trying to clean up from the previous person who had his job before. He had a big mess, is really what was going on. And he was just focusing on the student and was not thinking, well, there's a lot of administrative people that, you know, are waiting on him for information to be able to get their jobs done as well. And so instead of going straight into what's wrong with you, you're not
like we often do. Like we often do. It's always like, okay, what's wrong with me? What is my problem?
So I just wanted to check in with him. And it hadn't been that long ago that I was new to the institution. So I was able to understand where he was coming from and what it was like to try to get in there and clean up some issues that your predecessor had left you. And so, and he also took to heart that, you know, students are the center of our world. But there are just some other admin work that has to be completed. And so by talking to him and using my own experience from being a new employee there and helping him prioritize things and to, you know, just take care of things quickly and then move on, continue to work with the students. But just know that there's some things that just need to be done. They don't take a lot of time. Just do them and move on with life. And so he's gotten much better at doing that. Not 100%.
They say, although I've heard differing things, 21 days to form a habit. But I recently attended a leadership seminar and a lady said that was bull. Boop, boop. She said, it doesn't take 21 days. It takes, but I think framing it differently, because it sounds like, to your word, empath, he was being a little bit of like that with the students. He was letting kind of everything they needed overwhelm him and thinking it all had to be done now. And, you know, you saying it's not possible. We do as much as we can, but really giving him that guidance sounds like it's, he's on his way to being less so. Empathetic, not necessarily empath, is strong.
So, you know, when you think about, you know, sometimes being over empathetic with someone means the job doesn't get done. So there are teams that, you know, if someone is going through a tough time, something's going on and they're not given the assignments that other people are, that they're not challenged the way other people are, it can really cause a sense of unfairness in a team when you're over empathetic with one person because they are having a rough time. So you really have to balance that compassion for someone who's having a season of some difficult issues going on.
Absolutely.
Versus realizing, you know, we're all here to get a job done. So it's really balancing the task and the relationships with those people and just making sure that you stay fair. You know, and we all feel like there are things that are going, that happen in our life where people need to cut us some slack for a little while.
Yes.
And then we'll get back on board. But, you know, when that continues for a protracted amount of time, then people can start developing resentments.
Absolutely. And I love that it's kind of a empathy for a season, because it is. I mean, it's a season of somebody's life that they're not going to be in it forever, but it's being empathetic of that space and that place that someone's at.
Exactly.
And how can we be there? Well, you know, there's so much out there right now as far as like AI is going. And I'm curious your thoughts on all of this, because, you know, I've attended a conference that it was just the simple statement that this presenter just made and then kind of said it and just kind of moved on from it a little bit. And it was just like, it was mind blowing for me, because I thought about, you know, as much as all of us are enjoying the benefits of AI and how much easier it is to access things and put things together. You know, he said, AI cannot teach EI. He said, there is a lot of information out there, but we have to know how to use it. And so in a world increasingly mediated by technology and AI, how do you see these tools impacting our ability to be able to connect emotionally? Because to this presenter's point, AI can't teach it. You know, like you can put in, you can tap in, mm-hmm. tell me how to be an emotionally intelligent right. person. And that's great. The 10 steps of, and we all love our 10 steps, you know, our, how do we get there? I do one, I do two, I do three, but I'm just curious, how are you seeing this impact?
Well, you know, there are chatbots and all types of tools out there that help people that are dealing with, say, customer service representatives. They have tools that let them know that from the tone of this customer's voice, they're getting frustrated. So try this, you know, try this different tone. I mean, they're out there, and it really helps customer service people be able to detect. And a lot of times that's from overseas. And so there are cultural differences. They don't always notice, you know, when someone who speaks another language is getting irritated. So it's helpful in that way, but I think over-reliance on that can really put us at a disadvantage. And, you know, as an educator, artificial intelligence is taking up a huge amount of mind share for us because students want to use it. And cheating is at an all-time high. It's prevalent where students are using AI to cheat. And so so what we're really focusing on is how do we teach students to use AI, because it is a tool that we find valuable, but how do they use it in an ethical way, in a way that shows emotional intelligence? And so I think for them, it goes back to the whole self-awareness piece. It's like, how can I use this in a way that supports what I'm doing, but it doesn't take away who I am. And so I think about, I use it, but just the other day, I had to decline an invitation that a student sent me to be the chair of their dissertation. I just had to decline it. I typed what I thought was a polite way to decline this. And then I put it in ChatGPT just so, I was like, make this more polite. And it actually came out as more, I thought, more harsh. I'm like, this comes across like, as condescending.
You're like, this isn't being empathetic. This is not being like, you know, you were self-aware enough in that moment to say, I can't say this.
Right. And so I didn't use it. I kept what I wrote originally. And so, so I think there's been other times where I've entered stuff and I'm like, yeah, that does sound better. And so the next time I write, I'll know to use that technique because it does get my point across in a more concise way.
It does. So, it does. I agree.
So it's a huge challenge for us to be able to teach students how to use that, but to also realize that they have to do the work. They have to, and to allow them to be able to learn from whatever AI is telling them and not to be overly reliant on it. So, you know, for me, when I use it, I think about, I'm not being graded for my writing, but students are. But I always want to get better. And I think we've all, I mean, for the longest time, we've used AI. I mean, have you ever used Grammarly? Have you ever accepted a suggestion from Grammarly? That's AI.
That's the form of AI. It's just enhanced itself so much in the last couple of years that it's been interesting of just putting it in. But I love how you're saying learning how to use it. And I love the customer service example. That's perfect of... You might be picking up on this. Oh, I need to be listening now for tone of voice. Are they upset? You know, so how do I respond to that? So it's that practical application. And I think that was that presenter's point of we've got to transition that because there's so much out there of knowledge. But unless I know what to do with that knowledge and how to act on that knowledge, it's not meaningful or helpful, I don't think.
Exactly. So... You know, I think we're going to be dealing with this for here on out.
It's here to stay. I don't think it's going away.
It really is. And, you know, and I think about some of the hybrid work environments that we all have. and that I have. I work remotely, and so I think about my whole day. So I'm on Zoom meetings. I interact with my friends through text, or you know, instant message or email or whatever. And so I'm not always face to face with people. And so anytime that I have an opportunity to, I want to always do that, because I really worry about myself and getting away from the face to face interaction to where might I lose my skill of being able to read other people's facial expressions, you know, that people have these little micro expressions that you don't always see on Zoom. Or people don't even turn on their camera half the time. So
exactly. And I think when it comes to leadership, you bring up a great point, because we have to be so much more intentional about that. Because if I have a remote team, how am I checking in and maintaining that relationship? And that's something that I think extremely emotionally intelligent people do well, especially in this world post-COVID. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I hear a number of people I know that I'm working with right now are coaching. They're like, oh, my boss is on the West Coast. I see him. He comes in town twice a year. And so we either do a phone call or we'll do a Zoom every other month or something mm-hmm. like that. So I just think we have to be so much more emotionally intelligent about those things, or those relationships can be diminished and they won't be as impactful. And, you know, good people will leave from it if they don't feel connected. So as leaders, I think it's really, really important to think about that. Like, how are you connecting with people, as you said, and making a conscious, intentional effort to do that?
Right. You know, because, you know, so much of our communication is nonverbal. And so, you know, we can't always just rely on emails or, you know, text. Sometimes it really does help to see people's faces.
It does.
And how they're reacting to different news or decisions that are made in an organization. And so how do you think about the emotions of all the stakeholders in the decisions that you're making? And that's really tough to do when you're on a Zoom call with a dozen people and half of them don't even have their camera on.
I agree.
All you see are their initials.
I agree. Well, but even worse, you know, the initials, you're like, who is that? You know, when you bring up the email and the messaging, because so much is lost in translation. And I talk about this a lot when I talk about being proactive communicator. I'm not getting to see the body language. And so I am just reading something and I could be imputing the total wrong intent of what this person said. Even if this person says, and I'm guilty of this, that's fine. Oh, well, they don't mean that's fine. I can hear tone in the voice. And you're right. Then you stop yourself if you're trying to be more emotionally aware. And you're like, how do I know there was tone? I don't know there was tone. I'm imputing there was tone. So maybe in that moment, we stop messaging, we stop emailing, and we pick up the phone or we get on a Zoom and we say, let's talk about this. But I think we've relied on so many of these things because it's quick, it's easy. Of course, you're going to know what I meant. You're not going to take that. And it's just like, I think that's a lot of non-self-aware of, no, you can't assume that they're going to know exactly what you meant, what you said in that written form of communication.
Exactly. And you know, mood makes a whole big difference too in how people respond to things and how they receive them. So, you know, if you're already in a bad mood and somebody sends you an email, I mean, you're going to read into it more negatively than if you have a sunny disposition.
Exactly. You're going to be like, that's so lovely they said this. And then you're going to read out and go, oh, I can't believe they did that. And then, you know, the rest of your day is hijacked by something that probably wasn't even something. You were, again, just imputing that onto that.
And mistakes are made. Also, so just the other day, I texted my niece and she thought she was replying to someone else and sent me a note. And I'm like, what's she talking about? And so, you know, but it kind of fit with our conversation and I thought she was being pretty rude. And so I called her and she's like, I didn't mean that for you. But I spent probably 3 hours thinking, dang.
She's being nasty.
So anyway, this whole ordeal with AI and, you know, how we're going to cope with that, you know, I think it's more positive than negative, because I think it, you know, if we can use AI to help us with the content of our work and aspects of our work, different aspects of our work, we can focus on the emotional piece.
Right. We can focus on other things. It's like it's delegating some things so we can focus on the things that we need to work on. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So what would be your best piece of advice for our leaders listening to activate hope when it comes to leading with EI, especially in this AI world where there's so much being thrown at us? What's your biggest piece of wisdom you can give outside of all the great wisdom you've shared with us on this episode?
I think if you just assume that you have work to do on this, would be a good start, and do kind of the things that I mentioned about taking some assessments online. Even if it's the free ones, it'll give you an idea of the components of emotional intelligence and where you might have some gaps, some opportunities there to start working on it. I think most people don't even think about this type of thing. And so just having that spark of awareness that you need to start thinking about it and just think about what all it could add to your life. It's not going to take anything away.
Absolutely not. And I mean, it's going to benefit you personally and professionally, but I say all the time with leaders, you can be working really hard driving north and your team needs you south. And unless you check in, you know, you're going to turn around and there's nobody behind you. Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to follow. And so to me, it is imperative, critical. If I could say anything when I'm, you know, working with leaders, it's, you've got to become self-aware about how you're showing up. And it starts mm-hmm. there. And you started the beginning of our conversation with that. It's, I got to have some baseline for this because I could think I am just out there rocking it, doing fabulous work. And if I'm not, surely somebody's going to come and tell me. Well, you and I both know the reality of it. When there's the power dynamic at play, it's like, I can't go tell my boss they don't listen and they interrupted meetings and they don't, you know, but if there's a safe space for me to ask for that feedback and generally want it and generally want to become better, and my team senses that, my boss senses that, I think that is really, as you said, that's kind of that first place to start, is just recognizing I may not be as great at everything as I think I am. Right. And then there may be other things I don't think I've been doing well at all. And I find out I'm actually doing
killing
all right.
It, yes.
I'm killing it. So it's like, you know, again, working in or driving in that wrong direction. And, you know, I don't know about you, but as expensive as gas is, I don't want to be driving in the wrong direction for too long because it costs you. And in leadership terms, it costs you relationships and trust.
Well, it could actually derail your career. So
it can.
It is
better to get a handle on it. So if our guests out there listening want to hear, our listeners want to know more about this assessment that you do, or just have continue this conversation with you about emotional intelligence, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of Dr. Robin Hinkle?
Well, they can contact me at work. Through my email at robin.hinkle@franklin.edu.
Excellent. Well, I cannot thank you enough for being a guest on our show. I knew this was going to be a wonderful dialogue, and I was so excited to talk to you about this because this impacts so much of the work that I do as well. And just to learn a little bit more about how I continue to help, you know, the clients that I serve, I thank you for sharing. I thank you for sharing this wisdom with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I'm so happy that you asked.
Oh, well, thank you. And you know, I will see you soon.
Yes, you will.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Now go activate your hope, and we look forward to seeing you next time.